Why don't you tell me a little bit about what this week is going to be like with the crossover deadline approaching?
Well, in college life, fraternities and sororities have something called Hell Week, which is sort of the initiation period before you become full members. What is most comparable to that. For a bill to remain viable to pass this year, for all practical purposes, it has to cross over from one chamber to the other. And so, yeah, during the next 4 days, I'm expecting very long session, lots of committee meetings where bills get reported out and immediately jump to the floor. So there's always other ways to move bills, but they're harder than just going ahead and making crossover.
What do you think so far of what's gotten done so far in the legislature?
Well, I mean, it's still early on. I mean, the main reason we're in session every 2 years is to adopt a budget, and we haven't really started on that. The reason being is that we've had a lot of tax code changes, and we're really waiting to know what our revenue numbers are. I mean, we've got McCrory's budget in, but that will all start after this week is over. I really can't say that there's any one set of issues that have moved forward. The other big set of issues relate to health care, and the House, the Senate, the governor have not yet reached agreement as to where that issue is moving. Since it involves money and tax code issues, it's not subject to the crossover deadline. So I'm hoping we'll see some movement on those that whole set of issues in the near term.
Okay, so I saw just the other day there was an op-ed by the Asheville Citizen-Times talking about one of the bills that you're sponsoring. Now, this has to do with state sales or county sales taxes and city sales taxes.
That's right.
And could you tell me why the need for that? I assume this has to do with something to do with Harry Brown's proposal to change the way sales taxes are collected.
Well, not really. It has more to do with the changes that were made last year with respect to the privilege taxes. Many cities had come to rely on privilege taxes that were charged to businesses operating in their municipal areas. And the loss of those revenues caused by the change in the tax code, were significant for some cities. And legislative leaders promised that we would try to address those issues, giving the cities and more options and counties more options in terms of raising money. And so that's really what it is more about. Now, again, it is a change in the tax code, you can't suggest that it isn't related to the other changes that are being suggested. But it's again relatively early in the process here, and it's not real clear what might move. That's House Bill 903, and it's got a finance referral to it, so it's not subject to crossover.
Oh, okay, I gotcha. So there's no rush on that one.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but I think the counties and the cities are in the midst of putting together their budgets, which they have to adopt by the end of their fiscal year in June. So it's not a rush this week, but we do need to move on this in the next month or so.
Right, gotcha. And what do you think of Harry Brown's proposal? I know that's coming out of the Senate, but
Well, I think every legislator looks at it and quickly tries to figure out how does it affect your district. And Henderson County, actually, the change would be a positive one. Some of the municipalities, though, in Henderson County would be hurt by the change. And the discussions I'm aware of that are ongoing in Henderson County is that perhaps the county would make the cities whole for any losses that they incur, again, with a net positive for Henderson County. You know, I fully recognize that other parts of the state are affected in other ways, including Buncombe County and the city of Asheville.
Do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing, or is it just one of those things that sort of needs to be kind of, looked at more closely?
Well, it's going to be looked at more closely. I'm not on the Finance Committee, so I haven't made a firm decision on it. It hadn't even moved in committee at all. But obviously, since it positively affects Henderson County, I'm more inclined to be supportive of it.
What did you think of the changes to the gas tax, and were you supportive of that?
I was supportive of it. One of our biggest challenges in the state is funding transportation, and the gas tax has worked well for years to do that because basically, you know, if you use the roads, you bought gas, and therefore we're paying for them through the gas tax. But the needs in the state are outstripping the revenue, and the revenue is flat or even going down as our cars get more efficient and we find other ways to move. So we're really struggling with transitioning to something else. We have now not allowed the gas tax to go as high as, to go as low as it would go if left to the way it was before the passage of the recent law. On the other hand, we're going to be putting in place other revenue options. I believe Representative Torbett from Gastonia has put out a more of a comprehensive fix that moves us past just the reliance on the gas tax.
Okay. One of the things that we've been hearing a lot about are incentives. I know that the House passed more money for JDIG as requested by Governor McCrory. What do you think about JDIG and about the incentives, and are they necessary, and do you think we're doing enough?
I've voted for the House side bill. I've always got a queasiness about incentives. There's a part of me that just doesn't like them at all. But I also don't believe in unilateral disarmament. And the fact is that many other states are offering incentives that if we can't at least get close to matching them, we don't have to go dollar for dollar. But we're gonna lose business that will just locate barely across state lines, simply over the tax incentives. So generally I have been supportive. Need to be targeted more towards bringing businesses to low-wealth counties. I think the criticism of the incentives by Senate leaders is actually fair. And again, we seem to be working these issues out. I mean, the House passed its incentives bill some time ago now, 2 months ago. But the Senate is now moving to take up the bill. And I think that reflects the fact that House and Senate leaders are trying to work through their differences in a adult-like fashion.
Mm-hmm. I've heard some say that by limiting incentives to Wake County, Mecklenburg County, that they're really hamstringing businesses who are really would want to move to those areas because that's where everything is. So how do you sort of address those concerns if companies maybe say are only looking at Wake County, Mecklenburg County? Is there a way to get them to look at other counties? Do you think that's what the Senate is
Well, some of my colleagues think there is a way, and that is tying those incentives to or providing greater incentives than incentives you might get for locating in one of three or four urban counties. Just making it more financially beneficial to move somewhere else. Of course, again, companies are looking now at a broad range of other things that don't relate to money at all. Quality of life issues related to their employees, infrastructure that is already in the place, which is oftentimes built out in a more urbanized area. So I don't think, you know, the incentives by themselves, at least our experience in Western North Carolina has been that incentives by themselves, you know, don't ensure that companies locate in our area. It's a mix of things.
It seems like there have been a few high profile, and I don't know how much the incentives played in on these decisions, but Mercedes went to Georgia. Volvo has ruled out North Carolina, according to some recent reports anyway. Do you think that's a direct result of not having enough incentive money being doled out to these companies?
If I knew the answer to that, I'd weigh into the incentives debate a little bit more. I just think it plays a part. It's very clear that in a number of instances, other states have provided much larger incentives, and companies have located elsewhere. With that said, in my own district, Sierra Nevada, located to the Buncombe-Henderson County border, and they were very upfront that they could have, they were offered more in the way of incentives in two other states, and yet they chose Western North Carolina. And that's going back to what I said about there really being a mix of things that companies have to factor in.
And was it the quality of life argument that you made that they made to you?
That's what they said after the fact. They said that it was about where their employees were going to live. They said, you know, come to downtown Hendersonville, and you see a very vibrant place, good school system. The state was very helpful in terms of some infrastructure needs to bring them there, and they had a really good source of clean water.
What do you think about film incentives and the changes to those?
Another really hard issue. I have generally not been supportive of the film incentives. I just don't see them creating, you know, sort of long-time jobs. They sort of move around follow the incentives, and I'm just not sure I can stretch enough to make the major investment in film incentives.
Do you think the effect to the Wilmington community, at least, seems to have been a pretty clear so far? Do you think that because Wilmington alone seems to benefit much more than the rest of the state in that area, that maybe that's one reason why film incentives aren't as propped up during this session or in the last one?
Well, again, I think most legislators, you know, would prefer everything else being equal to not have incentives. And if the incentives are not likely to do anything for one's district, you don't have a reason to get way out front and supportive of these incentives. Certainly the Wilmington area legislators have been, you know, pushing strong for the incentives. But at this point in time, I just don't expect us to go back and look at that issue. There probably will be some effort made within the context of the budget to provide some amount of money, be they in the form of tax credits or some sort of grant program. But the grant programs are, you know, pretty clearly a lot less money and a lot less likely to lead to movies and TV programs being produced in the state.
Mm-hmm. It seems like one of the things that the House will take up today is changes to the State Environmental Policy Act. What do you think about that? Are you in support of that?
You probably know my background. I'm a former national president of the Sierra Club. No, I don't support what they call SEPA reform. In its present form, it's really SEPA repeal. There are a range of things that the State Environmental Policy Act, which sort of mirrors the National Environmental Policy Act, is important for here, and I will oppose that bill.
Okay. And I know that Molly Diggins has made a statement that maybe it could be reformed, but this bill so far in its current form isn't the way to do it. I think that's the quote. Is there a way to tweak the bill in a way that would satisfy everyone, or do you know?
The big thing is what range of state programs is it going to relate to? The current bill is very broad. It sets up, a $20 million threshold.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the current bill would basically mean that SEPA is on the books, but nothing ever is affected by it. The obvious way to change the bill would be to move that number from $20 million down to something much more reasonable, maybe $1 million. But again, remember that it's not a direct correlation between the size of the project and its environmental impact. So you're giving up a lot by going there. The bill, I believe, at this point wouldn't trigger anything if proposals or programs were put forward or projects were put forward on, you know, state forest or state parklands. You could make sure that any projects of that nature were automatically still requiring SEPA reviews. I don't know what is going to ultimately come to the floor, but they do have to move that bill this week to make it eligible. So we're going to see something move fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm. I know the arguments made for it are that these rules are not necessary because of existing state and federal rules. Is that true? I mean, are there protections beyond?
Well, yes and no. The State Environmental Policy Act was passed long before we had a whole bunch of other laws in place. And so, yes, over the years, other laws have sort of, you know, provided some levels of protections that weren't there when the State Environmental Policy Act was introduced. With that said, there's still a range of things that are out there. Ironically, SEPA has been most commonly used with respect to the siting of solar arrays, and there's no other law that affects, you know, looks at what the environmental effects of those might be, and so the law is being used to analyze that before we get into that business.
Oh, I see. Well, I know that the state is really already a leader in solar energy, and that kind of brings me to this other bill, the Energy Freedom Act, which I believe you're a co-sponsor of, right?
I am.
And I believe this is the one that would allow third parties to sell.
That's right.
Yeah, so people could put solar panels up on their roofs and wouldn't necessarily be beholden to Duke Energy or whoever else.
Yeah, we've got Duke. Or the energy producers have got regulated monopolies. And so if somebody produces power, it could be individuals. It's more likely to be companies or even governmental agencies, a university or the military. At this point, their only option is to sell that power to the energy producer. As opposed to sell it themselves or provide it to others. And so this sort of opens up the world to competition in the energy production
Now, I've seen one argument against this, that it would sort of allow that it would sort of allow these third parties who maybe wouldn't be as strictly regulated, say if the power went out, Duke Energy is required as a regulated monopoly to get the power back on. What do you say to that?
Well, I tend to say that competition is good. It's not surprising that the power companies who have a monopoly don't like the idea that somebody else is going to be out there producing power. I mean, the energy companies do have some embedded costs, and you know, we've got to reflect. We can't leave those lines and production facilities in any way stranded. But at the same time, I think we're in a different place now, and energy can be produced in economically beneficial ways, and we ought to begin to allow that to happen. I introduced the same type of bill last session, and there it was fairly narrowly drawn related to the military. In response to that, Duke Energy, you know, basically said they were opposed to pretty much everything. And so Representative Zoka, who was co-sponsor to my bill 2 years ago, he took the lead on this bill, with me now as his one of his primary co-sponsors.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, so I was looking at some of the bills that you had co-sponsored, and I noticed one that had to do with renewable energy, and it looked like it extended renewable energy tax credits for companies for a year that had already sort of gotten started. Is that the renewable energy tax credit, or is that a— because I would have thought I would have heard more about that.
Well, the big issue was the fight last week over repeal of the renewable energy portfolio. Mm-hmm. Proponents of that bill were defeated in the Utilities Committee, which I don't sit on, in their effort to just outright repeal the portfolio. You've also got a set of tax credits. The portfolio relates to, you know, what mix of energy sources these monopolies do, basically, needs to include. And so there are requirements that do, you know, obtain a certain percentage of its energy from, you know, the solar or wind or something else. And then on the other hand, you've got these tax credits, which are set to expire in the next year, although we just passed a piece of legislation that sort of provides a glide path for projects that are already, you know, moving towards production but may not be finished by the end of the year.
Oh, I see. Okay. And I know that with wind energy in other states that I've looked at, a lot of talk has been about a lot of wind energy companies shutting down because of the expiration of their credit, or at least the potential expiration of it, because they sort of like John Scavarla said about the auto companies, that these companies need certainty. Do you think that the credits, the tax credits and everything, and how far they extend is enough for these companies to invest?
Well, I mean, businesses of all type want security. They want to know, you know, what are the rules, and, you know, be able to run the math and know that the regulatory climate is, you know, stable. And so, you know, at a point in time when these tax credits are up in the air for discussion, maybe rolled back, maybe put forward, it does restrain companies from making investments until they know, you know, are they in place or not.
Mm-hmm.
And the debate is going forward. There's a very lively debate in the General Assembly over all things sustainable energy production.
Mm-hmm. What about B corporations, benefit corporations, and
one of my favorite little bills. I don't anticipate. Well, the B Corporation bill is not going to make crossover, which means that if I move the bill, I will move it after crossover, and it will be a 2-year bill at best, meaning it could pass out of the House this year, but isn't eligible for the Senate to take it up until the short session. I put forward this bill 2 years ago and lost in a relatively narrow vote on the floor. This time, again, I anticipate, for reasons I don't fully understand, if I try to move the bill, it will be viewed as controversial. And it could be close. So I'm trying to ascertain whether it's viable in the House. The Senate passed it overwhelmingly 2 sessions and 3 sessions ago. And in talking to Senate leadership, understand that if I can get the bill out of the House, it likely would pass the Senate.
What are the arguments against this that you're seeing it could be controversial?
The concern is that it may be used by people that are very politically liberal push forward any number of things that some of my colleagues just disagree about. And I'm trying to be, I have a hard time, as I said, understanding exactly what the problem is here. B corporations are allowed in 30 some odd states right now. This is legislation that has, been put forward by Republicans and Democrats in other states, and why it has gotten so politicized here, I don't understand. It's mostly opposed by sort of foundations on the right and members of the Tea Party get really agitated about B Corp, viewing it as some sort of stealth way of pushing forward a set of issues that they don't agree with. I don't view it that way at all. I find, particularly with younger people who are starting out, they want to make a profit, but they also want to do things consistent with their values. And so rather than forcing them into the box of being a nonprofit where they really can't put a lot of their own money into it because, it's sort of lost, or forcing them to be, a for-profit where they really can't factor in, given their fiduciary responsibilities to their shareholders, the values that brought them to do whatever it is they're doing, the B Corp is really logical. You can collect taxes on it as a for-profit corporation, but it can be about some social good, be it conservative or liberal. It really doesn't have a philosophical bent one way or the other.
Now, so does the state of North Carolina not have any B corporations?
Have B corporations that are incorporated in other states business here, but we don't have any North Carolina B Corps because North Carolina law doesn't provide for them.
Oh, okay, I see. That's interesting. Well, so that's interesting because you're a Republican, so you're not super liberal person. I mean, you may be liberal on some issues, I'm sure. The environment would be one.
Well, I view myself as conservative on mm-hmm. the environment. I'm about protecting air and water. And what could be more conservative than conservation?
Yeah. It's interesting. I saw this other bill that seems to have been gotten some people riled up. This was the Property Protection Act that recently passed. Now this bill would prevent someone from basically getting a job under false pretenses to sort of investigate that company, but it would not prevent someone who already works at a company from then exposing misdeeds at the company. Is that correct?
Broadly, yeah. I mean, you do have some whistleblower protections in the state, but this effort is to keep people who have an agenda from pursuing their agenda by falsely representing themselves, becoming an employer of, let's say, some big company that they think is polluting or has employment practices that are wrong or is mistreating animals, and becoming an employee so that they can gain inside information on whatever it is that they're engaged in. The bill, as things oftentimes do here, sort of got mischaracterized. The sort of animal rights community went at this thing as something called ag gag. And it's actually much broader than industrial farms in terms of its scope. And I really think it is one of those perfect examples of a bill that is very different than how it's being described.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so that was a bill that you supported, and that one has already passed, right? Or at least
passed the House.
Passed the House. Okay, gotcha. Now, you supported the new regulations on abortion, correct?
I did.
And why is that?
That's a hard one. We keep coming back to the abortion issue, and I frankly wish we didn't. But, I'm paid to vote on whatever comes before me, even if I don't want to vote on it. The bill that ultimately ended up on the floor was clearly a compromise struck between those people who wanted to do a lot more in terms of restricting abortions and those people that wanted to do nothing. Extending the waiting period for having an abortion, those folks who were afraid of North Carolina rolling back, protection for abortion, if at the start of the session, probably would have been quite happy to know that what we passed in the House was the only thing that passed. I voted for it primarily because, it was clearly going to pass. The governor had indicated that he would not veto the bill. If the governor had taken a different stance on that, then I would have had to try to figure out whether, my vote was critically important one way or the other on that issue. I'm not for abortions, but I'm also take an oath to support the U.S. and federal and state constitutions, and this issue is just highly litigated. I do believe that the bill we passed is constitutional, and therefore I supported it.
Do you think that this bill, like you said, it's highly litigated? Do you think this bill will lead to lawsuits?
I'm sure it will.
So if we had a 24-hour waiting period, what was the reasoning for extending that to 72 hours? I mean, what does that in effect do?
Well, it provides two more days to give some thought to if this is a procedure that a woman actually wants to have. There are exceptions to it in cases where the mother's life may be endangered. The view is that abortion is not something one should casually undertake, and the proponents of the bill wanted more time before a mother would make that final decision.
But doesn't that sort of take the decision away from her, because she could have taken those 3 days if she wanted it to begin with, right?
That's true.
Well, so So one of the things that was stripped out of it had to do with the schools, UNC Chapel Hill, ECU. Well, what did you think of those provisions before they were stripped out?
Those provisions concern me. I just, again, I'm not real comfortable with the state wading into how doctors are trained. And there was a lot of back and forth. And again, this was not my bill, and it was not a bill that I was, you know, actively engaged in. But there's a lot of back and forth with medical educators and physicians on those provisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you said with this bill, you were hoping that you wouldn't have to vote again on abortion. So I'm sort of assuming that you may be a little bit happy that the religious freedom bill is something that you won't have to vote on either, according to Tim Moore. Is that correct?
I'm not. My primary mission here in being at the General Assembly is the budget, and I think you figure out what your priorities are and you invest in those priorities, what they are. We have, over the last 4 years, taken on a lot of different issues, social issues, and I periodically have not been excited to be voting on them, but you vote on what comes forward.
Mm-hmm. I think the religious freedom bill is dead. If that were to cross your desk, would you support that? And I think the other one that's similar to it, having to do with the magistrates being able to be exempted from performing same-sex weddings, say, and that, was that something that you could support?
Haven't made a decision on either of those. I have a pretty solid practice of not wading into Senate bills until they're over and before us, and I've seen them in their final form. Most of these issues, whether it relates to abortion, gay marriage, guns, animals, they have a way of changing. And so, I don't generally take a position on a bill until that I know more likely than not is going to change.
Mm-hmm.
If I'd taken a position for or against the abortion bill, what I voted on is very different than, what was initially put forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just not going to speculate on either of those issues. I can make pretty good arguments on both sides of the religious freedom bill, and really was waiting to see if we were going to vote on it or not.
So you mentioned the budget being one of your priorities. Obviously it's a big one. And what do you hope that this legislature will prioritize in the budget? And what do you hope to sort of bring to it, I guess?
Well, I'm one of the appropriations chairs. And so for the first time, I've really got the responsibility for everything in the budget. 2 years ago, I chaired education appropriations, and most of my focus was, just on the education parts of it. 2 years before that, the same was true, and I was on transportation. I'm hoping that the revenue numbers that we'll get this week are going to give us, for the first time since I've been here, the ability to begin to put money back into some areas that we know we need to fund. We've got some serious issues related to state salaries getting out of whack with the private sector. Good example would be State Highway Patrol. We're spending a lot of money recruiting people to become State Highway Patrol members and officers, and after a year or two, we're losing them because the private sector, they can make more money as a security guard in some places than they can as a state highway patrolman. So that's just an example. There are many examples like that in state government where we're hemorrhaging people because we haven't been able to keep up on the salary side. We clearly made a commitment. We took a first step in addressing the salary issue related to teachers last time, with a focus on starting pay. We now need to take a second step, and what that exactly is going to be, I can't tell you yet. But I think there's a lot of interest if the revenue numbers come in right to begin to make some more investments in education.
Mm-hmm. Speaking to Democrats last week, a lot of them were talking about Medicaid expansion as being a big priority, and talking about sort of the revenue that would create for the state, at least in the short term. Are you in favor of expanding Medicaid, and if not, why? And well, sort of beyond that, how do we fix sort of our revenue shortfall, which I guess, you know, it's kind of up in the air as to whether or not it's going to be a shortfall or not, but I think we're in one right now.
Well, there you've hit upon sort of the difference between Republicans and Democrats, and I would expect that you would hear that rhetoric from Democratic colleagues. I don't expect the Medicaid expansion issue to come up. Both House and Senate leadership have indicated that they're not amenable to opening it up, and the McCrory administration has made some sounds about going down that road. Nothing's going to change until the McCrory administration says, you know, we want to expand Medicaid and becomes an advocate for it, and we're not there yet. So there's a lot of, you know, wringing of hands and a lot of push from my colleagues on the other side of the aisle on this issue. But you know, it's not going to happen near term. My personal position was I'm not one that is adamantly opposed to expanding Medicaid, but I'm not also one to fight battles that I have no prospect of winning. If and when the McCrory administration decides that it wants to put forward an expansion of Medicaid, I'd be willing to look at it. Up to this point, we've been really focused on trying to get the system fixed, and that's what I referred to earlier as one of the big issues that's still out there as and being debated is to, you know, how do we fix that system, you know, provide incentives for doctors and hospitals to save money while at the same time providing whatever set of medical care is needed by people.
Mm-hmm. You sort of touched on the House leadership a little bit, or leadership of both the House and Senate. Now, you've been in the legislature now under two House speakers with Tillis and Tim Moore. What are the differences between the two that you see, if there are?
I think they're very different. Tillis became speaker, you know, at a historic point when Republicans gained control of the General Assembly for the first time in over 100 years, the Republican majority had run on a platform of sorts, and Tillis governed primarily by, you know, keeping his caucus together, keeping the 68 and then 77 legislators together. Moore has been, you know, he still wants to have the support of the majority of his caucus, but he's been quicker to reach out to Democrats to be involved. So if you look back at the two big bills that have passed in the House, what I'd call the two big bills, one would be the incentives bill and the other one would be the gas tax bill. The majority of the Republicans supported those bills, but they also had significant support from Democrats. And so Moore seems to be more leading from the middle, more willing to reach out across the aisle, and less just about holding all the Republicans together. We haven't had a lot of just almost straight party line votes. The only one that comes to mind is the vote last week on abortion.
Do you see an improvement in, I guess, the working relationships between Republicans and Democrats?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, again, 90%, 95% of the bills down here, passed overwhelmingly. So what you're talking about is a small percentage, but they happen to be, the high-profile bills, and they also happen to usually be the big bills where we divide along Republican and Democratic lines. I think there's more work across party lines on issues, but there's also still a recognition that if you're a Republican legislator in the majority, you're more likely to be able to move your bills.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a Democratic member of the General Assembly, it's good to have Republican support.
Mm-hmm. One of those bills that did divide along party lines, seemed to, was the changes to the Wake County Board of Commissioners, which you were in support of. Why was that?
You cut off. I couldn't hear you.
Oh, I was talking about the changes to the Wake County Board of Commissioners.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you supported that. Now, why?
Well, anything having to do with elections and redistricting are going to be, really straight party, partisan brawls. And I tend to, there's a handful of exceptions, but I really, when you have local legislation put forward, I tend to support the local legislation that's been put forward. I have one of the prime co-sponsors of the bipartisan redistricting bill. I would like to get out of the business of doing redistricting a la Guilford County or Wake County. But we are where we are right now. And as a, increasingly more senior member of the Republican House delegation, you're not going to see me cross party lines on something as divisive as that, particularly when they're local bills. On the other hand, I was one of a handful of Republicans that voted against the partisan judicial statewide bill, and
mm-hmm.
I likewise opposed the idea of making all the school boards in the state partisan. And if a statewide bill runs on that issue, I will vote against it. If a local bill runs on that issue, I generally will support the local legislators.
So are you saying that there are bills that you don't like that you vote for because you could see repercussions within the party? Is that what you're telling me?
No, I'm not telling you that.
Well, it sounded like these were bills that you voted for that you didn't particularly like.
Well, there's plenty of bills I vote for that I don't particularly like. They're local bills that come forward, and I sit there and go, well, if this were in Henderson County, I'm against it. But, there's a certain amount of deference that you provide to local legislators with respect to legislation only affecting their area. And I'm wildly deferential legislators when they're legislating on issues in their own area. And I hope that they'll show the same deference with respect to legislation I might put forward with respect to Henderson County.
I mean, couldn't the argument be made that the legislature itself was not showing any deference to the Wake County commissioners, who are all Democrats, and had this bill change the way their election was in a way that would favor Republicans? That's not showing any difference.
That argument can be made, and, you know, 25 years ago, it could have been just the opposite. I mean, that's why, broadly, I'd like to get us out of doing partisan redistricting across the state, and I've introduced a bill to do just that.
And a bipartisan bill at that, right?
Well,
with bipartisan support, I guess.
I would like to not have the parties be responsible for drawing the lines.
Well, speaking of a bipartisan...
But again, we're not there yet.
Right.
Right now it's the cast is, gee, the bad Republicans are beating up on the poor Democrats. Go back a few years. Who didn't allow the effort to do away with this partisan redistricting to move forward? It was the Democrats.
Right. So I guess in terms of how the people who are the constituents see it, which party is going to finally break the mold and do the right thing, I guess. That's as voters, right? That's probably what the voters are thinking.
Well, I will listen to my voters on these things. I get some amount of flack actually in Henderson County for my efforts to make redistricting not partisan. I'm sure that my vote on the statewide judicial races will be something that in a Republican election in Henderson County, there'll be some people that think I should have been more partisan.
Why was that one seen as something that would benefit Republicans? I don't understand that.
I don't know. Again, I realize, most people that go to the polls don't have a clue when it comes to these judicial races. They don't. And so you have people, the party activists on both sides standing out there, handing out their little sheets, telling people who are the Republicans or who are the Democrats. And so, you can make an argument that, rather than going through all that, if that's the basis upon which people actually want to decide, these races, why don't we just show the partisan makeup of the people that are running. The races seem to go back and forth, and there's a 4-3 Republican-Democratic difference on the state Supreme Court at this point, but it's been the opposite way not that long ago. And a lot of people would just prefer, on the other hand, to get out of that.
Well, speaking of bipartisan bills, I saw the one, and I talked to Joe Sam Queen about this one last week. I was talking about the proposal on raw milk, and you're co-sponsoring that with him. Why do we have a need for this bill?
That's a bill that there's some difference of opinion. Commissioner Troxler's office called me when I co-sponsored it and questioned why I was wading into the raw milk issue. My view was that, government bans a lot of things, and sometimes those decisions are best made by people themselves. And so, rolling back, the restrictions on raw milk, for me was a, Something that appealed to me, and that's why I co-sponsored the bill.
Mm-hmm. You just reminded me of the tanning bed bill. Is that one that you support? And
yeah, that's the tanning beds, particularly again as it relates to youth and children. I think just they shouldn't be allowed to do that. The harm is pretty clear, and having run a summer camp for kids, I know that 14, 15, 16-year-olds don't always use very good judgment. With that said, I wouldn't support a bill that just bans all tanning beds. I think if adults want to do stupid things, government ought to allow them to do them up to a point.
Well, Representative McGrady, I've taken almost an hour of your time. I appreciate it. Is there anything, are any bills that we haven't focused on that you think are important to focus on, or anything that we didn't cover you think we should?
No, you've covered the broad spectrum. This week we're all caught up in small stuff, so. I've got a bill related to summer camp cabins that is about to move, and I'm hoping to get a bill related to hard apple cider growlers moving. But in the range of legislation out there, you've hit many of the high points.
Well, I know that the growler apple cider thing will be a popular one here in this
yeah.
region for sure.
I came to the General Assembly never expecting to become its specialist on all things alcohol, but between New Belgium, Sierra Nevada, Southern App breweries down my way, growlers for beer, and now growlers for cider, I seem to have developed an unexpected specialty.
You didn't really have a choice, did you?
No, it just it happened, and... The whole area of, it's taken two federal constitutional amendments to deal with alcohol, so you can imagine how convoluted the alcoholic beverage laws are in the state. And so I've unintentionally developed a specialty.
Yeah, exactly. Well, all right. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate
yep.
it.